Moving into item number 28, Columbia River Policy Review and Next Steps. This is a briefing and a public hearing, and briefing and public hearing, and not possible decision. So, Mr. Twight, I will turn it over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Smith and Commissioners, and former Commissioner Schmitten. I appreciate this opportunity to be here. I'm here with Ryan Lothrop, also of the Columbia River Management Unit. And I want to let you know in advance that this is your very basic PowerPoint presentation. No pictures, no graphs. It's in terms of presentation, it's going to be boring as heck, but I don't think the information is necessarily going to be that much. So this is an overview of the work that staff have been able to accomplish to date on the assignment that we got from the commission, both two assignments, one last September relating to more in-depth examination of some of the recreational fishery allocations, sort of what I loosely referred to as the upriver, downriver recreational allocations, recognizing that upriver isn't always the same point in all of them. But we were requested to take a look at the last 5 years relative to that. And then early this year, we were further requested to do a more comprehensive and in-depth review of the entire policy C-3620. We've been putting a lot of work into that. And this is our first orientation to you of that work. You've just seen it just in the last couple days. Staff is very aware of the fact that you've just seen it and probably not had the opportunity to digest a lot of it. So this is going to be a very high-level walkthrough. But we would certainly appreciate at the end some guidance from you in terms of areas that are going to need further work. It's a living document. It's a document that we all recognize needs a lot more work in some areas. And so that's kind of your overarching function. I'd like to start with a overview of the policy itself. The policy it now is 5 years old, but actually the work on the policy dates back quite a bit further than that. Yep. You really first began addressing a lot of these issues over 10 years ago, actually, and at one point had convened a bi-state panel that worked on a lot of these issues. And in addition, other processes have been underway relative to taking a look at the overall direction of Columbia River management. As you worked on this, you maintained fairly close coordination with the Oregon Commission. And at the same time that you adopted a policy, they adopted a set of rules that addressed many of the same issues. And there were, as you worked on it, three primary purpose objectives. And we'll talk about those as we talk about some of the overarching themes that we see in the preliminary results. Orderly fisheries, and in particular concurrency with Oregon, conservation and recovery, although that wasn't uniform across all the stocks, and we'll discuss that a little bit more, and then as well economic well-being and stability of both sectors, both the sport and recreational fisheries. You established recreational priority for numerous species as well, and in recognizing that it was a pretty aggressive policy with a lot of changes from status quo and that there was a fair amount of uncertainty about how well we would do at implementing many of the different action items in there, you directed that we proceed using an adaptive management framework, which means then pretty consistent monitoring of whether or not we're achieving any of those results and then reporting back to you on that. And this is, after 5 years of implementation, this is a time period when we can begin to give you some fairly definitive answers regarding a fair number of aspects of the policy, but we'll sort of walk through what we've been able to provide you in terms of fairly definitive and which answers we need to either conduct more monitoring or conduct more analysis before we can give you that. But that this is really an adaptive management step. From that standpoint, the As we've developed this, we tried to adopt a fairly systematic approach to both the requests from you. We developed a set of 40 essentially emphasis questions, and that's how the review that's in front of you is structured, is relative to those 40 questions. Each of those questions relates to a specific action point in the policy. And we tried to cover all of the different action points with those 40 questions. We may have missed a couple, but by and large, I think that's a pretty thorough and indexing of all of the action points, all of the expectations in the policy. So we believe that this approach will give you, as a commission, as you review it, and recognizing again that that's not going to happen just at this meeting, we believe that this is going to give you the basis for determining whether or not the policy is meeting the objectives as you see them, and if it is, are any changes warranted? If it's not, are any changes warranted? Again, thinking about this as an adaptive management framework. We have tried to incorporate as much stakeholder review of this report as possible, given the very limited time frame. So, for instance, we did have, and I think we can move on to the next slide. Oh, no, we're missing one point. We did have a meeting with stakeholders on Wednesday, but they had literally just received it an hour or so before the stakeholder meeting. And the meeting we convened was with the Columbia River Recreational Advisory Body and the Columbia River Commercial Advisory Body. So that discussion was primarily for them just an overview of the document and orientation into how to work with it. And then, of course, we did get some initial feedback, and we will incorporate that feedback as well into subsequent action on this, again, based on how you direct us. We've also presented this to the Fish Committee on Thursday, but again, with very limited advance time to read and digest. Again, it was mostly an overview for the Fish Committee members as well. So we've divided in our initial presentation of the report, we've divided those 40 questions into two categories. Those that were able to generate a pretty complete review of those questions and give you a fairly concrete answer, and then those that were simply either the review was incomplete or we needed additional information, we needed additional discussion in order to get to the nut of some of those. Virtually all the economic information, for instance, fell into that latter category, category B in your document, whereas category A, we were able to get a lot of the more specific requests and some of the other objectives as well. We worked extensively with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife staff, as well as with a fairly broad team within DFW. That team within DFW, there's a couple folks I really want to acknowledge. First off, the co-authors of the document, Ryan Lothrop and Cindy LaFleur, have just put in a tremendous amount of work, but I also want to acknowledge other agency staff, primarily out of the Vancouver office, but we also had help from Olympia Agency staff and, as I mentioned, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife staff. We'll continue to use that fairly broad team as we move forward, but a lot of folks put in a lot of time in order to get us to this point, and I very much thank and appreciate them for their efforts. So the results that we have to date. Again, we tried to organize how we present the results relative to the nature of the questions themselves. There were some high-level questions relative to the overall objectives that you established when you adopted the policy, and then there's more other questions that are simply more, were you able to do this or that? Did you implement Barbless Hook regulations? Did you develop a logbook program? what's the status of evaluation of off-channel? Some of those are more easily answered as yes, no. The high-level objectives, we tried to, by and large, look back to see what performance measures the commission themselves was potentially considering when you adopted this, and what you were looking at in terms of things like expectations around economic, what does economic well-being and stability mean? Well, your decision support document from that time included some estimates of where you thought X vessel value of the commercial catch might be after 5 years, where you thought angler trips might be after 5 years, and we're trying as to the greatest extent possible to rely on those expectations to help us establish performance measures for many of these high-level objectives. And a lot of the information you'll see in there relates to those performance measures. So relative to the first objective, promoting orderly fisheries, and again, we interpret a lot of that as being related to concurrent jurisdiction, because it can be fairly difficult to define orderly. We did note that because there are some differences between the Washington policy and the Oregon rule, and a couple of those are fairly substantial, there has been some decrease in concurrent regulations, or there have been cases where the two directors have had to get together and ultimately, after asking each commission for some flexibility, ultimately agree on an approach that often sort of splits the difference. But concurrency has been more difficult to achieve because of some of those differences, and we as staff are suggesting that there has been a slight decrease, but I don't want to give the impression that we still don't have a very high level of concurrence between the two states. We still overall do a very good job of achieving concurrent regulations, and staffs continue to work together in partnership on a lot of that. So a small problem, potentially not a large problem. As we looked at advancing the conservation and recovery of wild salmon and steelhead, first we focused on the stocks that were really the focus of the commission at the time from a conservation and recovery standpoint. And that's not all the stocks. That is primarily the lower Columbia fall chinook and lower Columbia coho. It was never expected that this policy, at least the initial implementation, would result in additional conservation gains for, say, spring or summer chinook or for sockeye. The expectation there was a shift in allocations and potentially a shift in economics, but there wasn't ever an expectation on the commission that this would necessarily lead to a substantive increase in conservation or recovery for those. Certainly, the expectation was that it wouldn't detract from existing efforts, and we don't see any signs that it has detracted from existing efforts for any of those. But our analysis is largely going to focus on the lower Columbia fall chinook and coho. Our initial results are that we don't see any major changes, but that's because of the expectation that we would have additional alternative gears developed and implemented by now. And I'll talk a lot about that alternative gear. The original policy relied very heavily on the ability of the agencies to use alternative gears to help achieve the conservation and recovery objectives, particularly managing PHAS. And then finally, the third overarching objective of maintaining or enhancing the economic well-being and stability of the industry. As I mentioned earlier, the two metrics that we're relying on first are the ones that the commission's relied on, both angler trips, and we're trying to, as we work with those, factor in the effect of run size, as because there's a direct correlation between both run size and angler interest, but also between run size and actual amount of opportunity. In years when there's low opportunity, there's going to be low angler trips, and that's not a result of the policy. That's a result of basic fishery management. So in trying to sort out whether or not the policy has increased angler trips, you have to factor out those sorts of things. Similarly, ex-vessel value, you can't just take the ex-vessel value. You've got to look as well at the amount of opportunity that was afforded and also take a look at price structure. Additionally, we're also trying to determine whether the ex-vessel value, and I'm not sure we're going to be able to do this, but a fair number of stakeholders have pointed out that the ex-vessel, the structure of profitability has changed some in this fishery, that it's a different profit margin fishing in the main stem than a fishing operation in the select areas, and we're trying to look into the nature of that stakeholder assertion and determine whether that's something that we can quantify and present to you as well. There's a lot of additional work that's needed on economics, and to the greatest extent possible, we're trying to answer that jointly, those questions jointly with Oregon, because it really is it's a two-state issue there. So what are some of the consistent themes then? I've referred to one of them already, but first let me get to recreational priority. Yes, we've been able to, this is one of those areas where we can answer with a fairly clear yes. Our management structure, our management framework has changed as a result of this policy, and we have been able to, as staff, as we're setting fishery seasons, we've been able to prioritize recreational opportunity on, particularly on Chinook, but that has been the focal point of the recreational priority. It's a little, we've used different mechanisms for spring and fall. For spring, the recreational priority in the main stem arises pretty simply from your policy direction that we not schedule commercial fisheries in the spring in the main stem. Or this is one of those areas, though, where Oregon provided slightly different guidance. They provided a set of exceptions for when you could, but that would be following those exceptions all sort of follow the peak of the run and follow the peak of fishing for both fleets. Whereas in the fall, the mechanism really relates more to whether or not, well, the areas where Lower Columbia Fall Chinook predominate, at this point we've almost completely removed commercial fishing from those areas. And so just geographically, there's a clear recreational priority from Buoy 10 upstream to the Lewis River mouth, as well as early in the season. We have been scheduling large mesh gillnet fisheries upstream of the Lewis River. And there, the recreational priority is really expressed just in the allocation itself. But downstream of there, it's a priority both in terms of allocation, but also in terms of fishing area. So some differences in how we approach, but that's based on the unique characteristics as well as the different policy guidance. But overall, yes. Alternative gear, not really. we've put a lot of work into it. From that essence, we do get it sort of a yes check mark. But have there been implementable results? No, not to date. Nor do we see clear daylight at this point towards implementable results, consistently implementable results. Again, it's a gradation of answers. There was an expectation that we might be able to use tangle nets for additional coho opportunity in the fall. We have actually done that a couple of times, but we've not been able to do that consistently, offer that as an every year sort of thing. It ends up being sort of a bonus fishery under certain circumstances rather than an actual fundamental part of the fishery. Our work with seines and both beach seines and purse seines, we've conducted a lot of work with that. We do not have further resources at this time to continue that work. And we are still cranking a lot of the numbers from the work that we've done, trying to come up with the the most fully informed estimates of long-term survival for fish that are released out of those gears that we can, and we haven't finished up all the analysis, so we're still working on that, but we don't have any plans at this point for further developmental work because we don't have the resources for it. The net result of both that, and there is ongoing work with the pound net in partnership with the Wild Fish Conservancy, and we will continue to develop that over this year, but that's as well a long ways from implementation. So in addition to the agency resources issue that we have with further development of alternative gear, there's also what I call the small mesh problem, and that's a very real issue for us, and that is, so for instance, there'd been some hope that we might develop an alternative gear that would work during the summer to give the commercial fishery some access to main stem fishing in the summer. There isn't a small mesh gear that we're aware of that will work in the summer because of issues with sockeye, because of issues with shad. Not that catching shad's a problem, but when you're trying to use a seine or some other small mesh gear to catch Chinook and you can't get it past all the shad, you're not catching Chinook, very obviously. And clearly we have very tight constraints on sockeye. Since Snake River sockeye are listed as endangered, and we have a very small allowable mortality rate on those for good conservation reasons. So that small mesh problem is plaguing us in the summer. The small mesh problem is also plaguing us in the fall. We're seeing a much higher encounter rate of steelhead than we'd originally envisioned, even though we're seeing some pretty low steelhead returns at present. And even though our long-term survival rate of steelhead released from small mesh is very good, it's a very low number, the high encounter rate ends up working against us to the extent that we can catch more Chinook using large mesh gill net. Even though it has a much higher mortality rate, it has a much lower encounter rate. We end up just being able to catch more Chinook with the large mesh gill net than we can access with the small mesh selective gears. It's a problem we haven't been able to work past yet. We're continuing to work at it. We're continuing to look at ways of achieving that, but it's an obstacle to date. So we have those kinds of problems with alternative gear development. We do not have any clear daylight at this time. That doesn't mean we're going to stop trying, but it does mean that if we're going to do more work with additional long-term mortality studies, we're going to need more resources to keep doing that. Off-channel fishing area development is a mix of news. We've done, in partnership with the state of Oregon, they actually were the lead agency on this. We've done a pretty thorough evaluation of all identified locations below Bonneville where we could try off-channel. One or two of them might have some promise. We could do some additional work, but none of them look like clear winners from the start, other than the ones where we're already currently working. Oregon has been able to increase production in a couple of those areas where we're working, but at the same time, we may also be facing reductions in a couple of the areas in order to meet the next stage of HSRG-type requirements, particularly managing strays. So we may have to further reduce some select area. If nothing else changes, in order to comply with the Mitchell Act buy-up, we may well have to reduce some production further. Whether that will entirely negate the Oregon production increases, I'm not sure. We can't tell you that at this time. But again, even the production is a bit of a mixed picture on that. I guess the basic message to the commission at this point on off-channel is don't expect a lot of further potential. What you see now is probably what you've got in terms of providing off-channel fishing opportunity. So an issue that we want to flag that we suggest the commission consider addressing somewhat separately from the overall five-year review because it's got a somewhat different timeline, and that's this fall fishery issue. where we have conflicting guidance from the two state commissions on two different aspects of the fall fishery. And this is the Chinook, this is the commercial harvest directed at Chinook. The Oregon Commission, the Oregon rule states that large mesh gill nets can continue to be used, subject to a fair number of conditions, to target upriver brights pretty much upstream of the Lewis River. As I think most of you are aware, the Washington Commission policy extended that allowable use through this year, through 2018, but then doesn't provide guidance after that. So in effect, it's not allowed after 2018. That's an area that's where we, because we don't have concurrent jurisdiction, that leaves staff in a pretty untenable position. Secondly, you also specified somewhat different allocation levels, although both the Oregon rule and the Washington Commission policy provide just enough wiggle room that there is some room for the directors to confer and meet in the middle. But the Oregon rule says something to the effect of no more than 30% allocation to the commercials, and the Washington rule says no less than 25%. So there's about 5% in there that we have to try to sort of find some point in the middle that's workable. That has posed problems. We've always been able to successfully come up with something, again, because you've delegated some flexibility to the director to work with the Oregon director in past years. But there is a need for the commission to give us further guidance on this issue prior to our 2019 planning process. I also want to talk a little bit, before we get to next steps, I want to talk a little bit about the work we've done so far in terms of looking at recreation, the diversity of recreational allocations, particularly the above Bonneville recreational opportunities. We've done some work looking at Zone 6 as well as the main stem snake and the upper Columbia. We have more work to do. But our initial analysis shows that we have been able to, in many cases, achieve many of our objectives on an annual basis for providing for healthy recreational opportunities upriver. And with each species, it's a somewhat different formula. Summer Chinook, for instance, the bulk of the recreational fishery is upstream of Priest Rapids Dam, actually, in that case. Spring Chinook, though, we've got the 75-25 recreational allocation directive. Oregon has similar guidance, which is good and helpful to us. And that 25% above Bonneville Dam has been an area of a fair amount of contention. There have been years where we clearly have come up very short, like 2017. There have been other years where, depending upon how you view it, we've achieved it, or where there's still been some concern upriver that the 25% ended up being precluded by other aspects of spring Chinook management, such as our need to do catch balancing. We're still trying to disentangle some of those. We need to do that both for this review, but also in advance of conversations that we're going to have midsummer with Southeast Washington stakeholders who sent you and the director letters of concern and interest back late last year. And your response was, we hear you, we do want to understand these issues better, and we will meet with you to walk you through both the mechanics of spring Chinook recreational allocation, but also sort of an in-depth analysis of what we've done. So we've got some of the initial work done to prepare for that. We still have further work. But I do want to flag that years like 2017, we pretty clearly did not achieve that objective. And in fact, how we managed below Bonneville essentially precluded any recreational opportunity upstream of Bonneville in a year like 2017. So next steps. first, you all need an opportunity to actually review everything that we've done, more than simply the not much more than 24 hours that we gave you. But from a staff perspective, this is an iterative process, and that you are going to need to think some about next steps relative to this. As I say, already we can see, and I've mentioned those in my overarching theme, some areas where we've clearly not met the expectations that were part of the policy. Obviously, there's more we can do to help you understand both why those weren't met, but equally, so what's the impact of not meeting them? Does that really matter in terms of the overall policy? We're not prepared to answer that today, nor are we expecting you to have a lot of insight into that today, but we think that if you flag some of those areas for us as the areas that you most want us to focus on, that will help us finish out this document and finish out this review. So we do intend to keep working on it at your direction, and on the areas that we've already identified as staff. We weren't able to finish in time. For instance, most of those Category B questions. At some point, you'll then need to switch gears from the, okay, we've got that information, but so what? You'll need to switch gears to considering whether or not any of this information warrants you adjusting this policy in any way. And you'll need to begin to give us assignments then relative to, okay, if we're going to do that, what's the range of alternatives we should be considering for potential adjustments? And we will plan on providing you an analysis of those alternatives. We also encourage you to discuss some of these concurrency issues with Oregon. As I said, we've been able to sort of get through the first 5 years without fully concurrent guidance, but it has not been easy, and I think it has detracted some from the overall policy. Your choice. You don't have to, because, again, as I said, we've been able to kind of thread the needle on some things, but I don't know how we're going to thread the needle, particularly on the difference on large mesh gill net. And staff certainly does not want to be in a position where we have non-concurrent guidance at that level. So, again, all these at this point are just suggestions from us about how you might be thinking about proceeding. But as I mentioned, you may want to consider having an actual joint meeting with the Oregon Commission, or you may want to consider having some other means of discussing concurrency with the Oregon Commission. And you may want to schedule another report back from us on work that we've been able to finish out on this analysis as sort of chapter two of this presentation today. And then finally, towards the end of the year, you may want to begin considering whether or not you need to actually take any actions based on what we're presenting to you. We will need, as staff, a lot of notice on what you're thinking about there, because it's going to take us time to develop alternatives and provide you some analysis of those. And then we would envision you would want to do a large amount of this, first off, continuing to have us work in partnership with Oregon, but equally we would imagine you would want staff to do a fair amount of public outreach on what's being considered. First off, what the results are to date, and we don't think at this point that we've done an adequate job of that. We've mostly just been able to orient stakeholders to what we did, but we haven't been able to get fully informed testimony back from them. And then secondly, if you are beginning to consider any changes, we assume that you would want to have extensive stakeholder engagement, not just through actual formal commission meetings, but through our work with advisory groups and potentially even some public meetings too. So a lot of work then needed relative to how to structure pretty full public engagement in this as you work through it. And that's again some of the guidance we'll need at some point soon relative to what these next steps might look like. And I think that's it.
We'll have a couple questions from the commission, then we have a lot of public that wish to comment. So, Don, this is kind of your bailiwick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And after public testimony, I would have some recommendations to the commission on how to proceed and some comments on a very thorough evaluation. For just now, though, I'm going to withhold all my questions of clarification because of the nature of the report that's just been delivered and the time constraints that we've got here. I did want to say to the staff, though, thanks for what they've done. It did just come out, and that has represented some difficulties for us to get into this in terms of clarification. So, as I said, I'm going to withhold all my questions of clarification. There were some readability problems with the report. Again, the staff only had 4 or 5 weeks to put this together. There is a tremendous amount of information in here, and it's greatly appreciated. I've got a few red marks here, I guess, that might help the staff on some of the readability things. But very much appreciate the fact that the staff has spent a lot of time on this. There is a lot of information there. They've worked with the state of Oregon, which we asked them to do. We've got to start somewhere on a big comprehensive evaluation, and they have put a very important first step out there. And I don't think we can start to get to any of the ideas on any adjustments or reactions of further adaptive management until we've had a complete and comprehensive evaluation. And so, Mr. Chairman, I'll withhold the rest of my remarks until after public testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to just probably reiterate a little bit what Commissioner McIsaac said. This document was a big, comprehensive, diverse, in-depth document that you folks put together, and it's really much appreciated. The fact remains that we traveled Thursday to get here. We then had our first look at this document at our fish committee. You know, I think it was 80 pages or somewhere thereabout. I think it's out on the table here. And then we met for 12 hours yesterday in session. And then we started this morning at 8 o'clock. So I don't know anybody that's had much time to dig into the bowels of that and try and grasp it and be able to talk about it in a pragmatic manner. And I'm not going to speak for others, but I have to spend some time with it and make some notes and come up with some additions and some questions. And I just think that's what we need to do. So.
Yes.
My question actually relates to the item that you bring to us sort of separate from this, and that is the decision that we're going to have to make about the Upriver Bright commercial fishery this year, kind of separate. One of the pieces that I'd be interested in understanding, we were monitoring that fishery, mostly looking at mortality. Do we have a good understanding, it doesn't necessarily need to be answered now if we don't know it, but do we have a good understanding of how important that fishery is in contributing to control of PHAS?
It's not intended to. For fall Chinook, we're not using either recreational or commercial fisheries to manage PHAS for several reasons. One is because the run itself upstream of the Lewis, once a lot of the lower river fish shake out, it's a fishery that's largely focused on some healthy wild stocks, the Upriver Bright, the Hanford Reach spawners, as well as some fairly large hatchery programs throughout the Mid-Columbia, and also Snake River Falls, which are listed wild, but are ESA listed as threatened and are a composite of both wild and hatchery production. But many of the hatchery fish in that aren't even marked. That's a small portion of the total. So the only area where selective fishery techniques really help us much upstream of the Lower Columbia runs, where selective fishery techniques would be helpful. But once you get upstream of that, once you're dealing with the Upriver Bright and Snake River Fall fish, as well as Spring Creek, is right in areas near those hatcheries themselves. In those cases, selective fisheries can be a useful tool. But again, the bulk of the fish that are being caught there are part of a healthy wild run, the Hanford Reach Run. So we have to look for other tools there to help manage PIAS.
The last one there.
You know, I do want to thank staff for the effort that they made at developing this document. I want to remind commission members and the public that we've just started this process. And I think we're going to be looking at this document and how it's formatted, you know, how we can interpret this, how we can provide it in a manner that's easily understood by not only myself, but the public. And so be a little bit patient with the development of this document, because this is the first iteration. I also wanted to point out, as Mr. Twight mentioned, there is work that's just fairly recently been launched that's going to look at things that could have impact on this document and the policy, which is looking at the spring salmon allotment and catch balancing is being reexamined, as well as a lot of work is just been started on upriver passage and fishery management that we're starting in the upper river, looking at escapement needs and production and moving it downstream. And we've really started a pretty major analysis with hopes of examining and managing the Columbia River as a basin and not just upriver, downriver. So I want to let people know that there's some real serious work that's been initiated on that I think will really help us down the road and will have some impact probably on this policy. So again, I want to mention that there's probably months of work ahead of us on this document and the policy and the implications of the work that we're doing now. And so that's just what I wanted to say. Thanks.
Thank you. And on that, under getting underway with part of that work, we will get into public comments. And we do have a lot of folks, which is great, that wish to provide public input. Many of you know the rules of engagement. Some of you might be new to this process. 3 minutes, you'll hear a beeper, and we'll turn the volume up. And if after the beeper goes off, you can finish your sentence, but don't start a second sentence, because then I'm going to start going like this and all sorts of hand signals, because we have a lot of people to get through today, and we want to make sure that we do have time to get through everybody. I will call you up two at a time, so we'll have a continued rotation, and I will start that with Rick Stillwater and Brandt. One more time, please.
Thank you, Chairman Smith and Commission. This subject's near and dear to my heart. I live in Eastern Washington. I fish for salmon and steelhead for over 55 years. I spent 30 years raising fish for the agency. I participate in Columbia River Compact calls, so I understand a lot about what's going on. When you look at this document, I briefly skimmed through it. It has a lot of information, but be cognizant of what's not in there. Very little mention of steelhead, very little mention in the Upper Columbia, very little mention of spring chinook in the Upper Columbia and its tributaries. It's something that I've been fighting with since I've retired, you know, trying to bring the numbers of fish back. Over 20 years ago, that was our main focus at East Bank, working with steelhead to bring back numbers. And it seems kind of odd to me that we're still talking about recovery and what we need to do. It should have been laid out 20, 30 years ago what we need to do. what I would say is stay the course. The agreement that the commission had to remove gill nets from the main stem Columbia. Don't spend time and resources on looking for a more friendly gill net. Get them off the Columbia. I speak from being an actual observer in the 80s when I was on a gill net boat working for Fish and Wildlife. The sticking point that I saw when in that fall fishery was the water temperature, high temperature, the amount of boats below me and above me, the fish that went back into the water. And what stuck with me ever since then was that fish didn't look good. The river current's moving 3 or 4 miles an hour. I see lighted boats and the ends of gill nets, 6 or 8 as far as the eye can see. And I'm wondering, how is that fish going to survive? In all my years with Fish and Wildlife and handling thousands of adult steelhead and salmon, especially in the upper Columbia River, I cannot really say that I've seen a fish that we trapped, brought into a facility with really gill net marks on it around the gills that survived to spawning. What you need to understand, most of the Chinook, when they enter that fishery in the fall, the water temperatures are extremely high in the lower river, or in the summer, for that matter. They have to make it up to tributaries that are in the 70 degrees. They don't have the benefit of hatcheries and fish culture to keep them alive. Steelhead have to spend a lot more time. So I request that, you know, you look at the document, get more in depth, and ask a lot of questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Yes.
Thank you for your comments. If after you review that, if you have any specific comments in any direction, we're looking for feedback from all people, all user groups to try and
just send them to Tammy.
Yeah,
all right,
that would be helpful.
Yeah. I'm retired. I can afford the time.
And Nathan,
again,
and Brant.
3 minutes.
You're representing you.
I am. Yeah, I'm wearing a different hat. Like I said, literally a different hat. Frank Capel. I live here in Wenatchee. A sports fishing advocate and enjoy fishing. I'm excited to hear that there is some real talk and maybe some real work towards examining this holistic approach to the Columbia River. I think it's been something that's been needed to be done for a long time, especially when we talk about this, you know, spring allocation 75-25. And you know, I think a lot of people in this room would be going, "Wow, I didn't even know that there was any allocation above Bonneville Dam, and that gets used up in a lot of other places, and we have never seen a spring Chinook fishery in the main stem of the Columbia, although it's been talked about." You know, our limitation here is 1 or 2 tributaries for spring Chinook. One is the Icicle River, very, very limited access. One where we finally got a little bit of access to the Wenatchee River, but that's only been once since that ever opened. The summer allocation, it's great that we have the majority of the allocation here above Priest Rapids Dam. We're pretty darn good at doing what we do up here, especially in this marked fish select fishery that we have now. And we appreciate Region 2's flexibility at times to open it up to non-marked select fishery when it is appropriate. But, you know, sometimes we don't use our allocation up here, and I think a lot of it has to do with we are limited to the marked select fishery, even though this is considered a healthy run, although I understand there are some constraints on fish getting back to the spawning grounds. You know, I support the continued implementation of the Columbia River policy, especially as it pertains to commercial fisheries moving into the safe off-channel sites and off the main stem. I think what we saw this last year in 17 was success in these safe areas, where for the spring Chinook run, the commercial fishermen harvested more fish in the safe commercial areas than all of the recreational fisheries combined. And then also in the summer Chinook fishery, the same thing from Astoria to Priest Rapids Dam. They harvested more fish than the recreational fisheries. That's great. I think that that's really, really working. I think that indicates to me that we just need to keep going and see what we can do on the fall fisheries. I understand that it is that, you know, it's unfortunate we haven't found that alternative gear to be able to use for that fall fishery, although the pound net is a really promising experiment from last year. You know, in the eastern area here, I'll finish up with this. There are times there's 500,000 fish going by us that are salmonids. Everything from endangered spring Chinook, steelhead, healthy but not enough natural spawners in the summer Chinook, and the fall Chinook that are in-stream spawners and the last in-stream spawners. So, you know, we really strive for a conservation aspect around here, and we are the last front of those fish that are spawning here in our backyard. So really appreciate that.
Thanks, Brent. And Commissioner Schmitten, please. And Nathan.
Hello again. Good morning. I would like to thank staff for the effort that they put into responding to the commission's questions. I think there's a lot of information here. It could be clarified better, and I think we all need to spend some time looking into it. I support the commission and urge the commission to continue to implement the reform policy as written, make no adjustments. In the fall, I do not want to see a large gillnet mesh net fishery. Commissioner Thorburn, a large mesh gillnet is 100% mortality. There is no release of fish. So whatever they catch in the net, they keep. One of my major issues is the geographical allocation of spring Chinook. So I'm going to ask the commission today to consider a motion per item 5 in the policy where it says the commission may consider changes to the recreational allocation in this policy in the future to balance the recreational fishery. I urge you to consider a motion today to direct staff to start that process. I understand we're unofficially in that process, but I would like to see my commission represent me as a Washington angler. You know, we have a Columbia River that is concurrent with Oregon, but a little bit above McNary Dam, it becomes all in Washington. And it's a real shame that I sleep next to the Columbia River and hatchery spring Chinook swim by, but I can't fish for them in the main stem. And the tributary fisheries, while we appreciate the opportunity, the one in my locality on the Yakima is dependent on flows. And when the Yakima is blown out, which is 9.9 years out of 10, you can't fish because it's chocolate milk and they don't see what you're offering. So I urge you guys to take action on behalf of Washington residents. And I'm sorry that the way it is a zero-sum game. Someone has to lose for someone to gain. But I look to you guys to represent us anglers in the state of Washington from the mouth to the upper Columbia, including the Snake River. There's a lot of us. If you look at the September presentation that Mr. Twight gave you, the Hanford Reach sport fishery in most years matched or exceeded the Buoy 10 upriver bright fishery. We can catch fish, we're just not allowed opportunity. So I urge you guys today to consider a motion, and also to ask staff what management changes they will put in place to prevent the 2017 upriver fisheries being non-existent. Not a I will do better or we will do a better job, but I'm looking for concrete what will be done better. Thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. Nello and
Raleigh
on the other side.
Welcome back.
Mr. Chairman and members of the commission, welcome, and Acting Director Storr. Welcome to Wenatchee, North Central Washington, and the Upper Columbia River Fisheries Management Zone. For those of you that I haven't met, I'm Raleigh Smitten. I've spent the last 40-plus years as a fish and wildlife manager, most of which has been spent on fisheries. I served as the Washington Director of Fisheries. I served as a Northwest Regional Director. I served 8 years as a National Director of Fisheries, and I'm happy to be home. I'm here representing myself. I like to think I represent the conservation of the fish in the Upper Columbia River, and on occasion, I'm a fisherman. Your time is important. My allocated time is short. Here's what I want to do. I want to give you a quick update on the status of our fisheries in the Upper Columbia River. Second, a one-sentence economic impact to that fishery. And third, and primarily, I want to talk about summer Chinook and its position in the current Lower Columbia River Fisheries Management Plan or reform. So, current status of fisheries here in the north. For the past year, in the main stem, as well as in the tribs, there has been no directed steelhead fishery in the main stem and in the tribs. No sockeye fishery in 2007. That's the first time in over a decade. Very personal to me because I live on Lake Wenatchee. No spring Chinook fishery in the tribs, and that's almost unheard of in Icicle, in that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife hatchery there in Leavenworth supports that fishery. And as you've already heard, minimal to no spring Chinook fishery in the main stem in the Upper Columbia River. Plus, the outlook for 2018 is similar to last year. What that leaves us is summer Chinook and fall Chinook as the driving stock, the stock that supports our fishery until they improve. So the economic impacts of the fisheries, when they're all engaged, all five fisheries are operating, it's about a $3 million annual dollars recreational fishing revenue to the Upper Columbia River communities. That's from Wenatchee up to Bridgeport. Let's talk about summer Chinook fisheries, and I'll give you a few facts. They are not listed on the Endangered Species Act. It's the only Chinook that we have that they are not. Secondly, all summer Chinook fisheries originate in the Upper Columbia River. Third, they're primarily hatchery fish of origin. The native component is building, but these are primarily hatchery fish. They're coming from PUDs, state hatcheries, federal hatcheries, and tribal hatcheries. The tribal new Colville hatchery for the past 2 years is putting out 2 million summer Chinook per year. And just as a side, and I don't represent the tribes and I can't speak for them, those 2 million fish prior to the hatchery, which just came online 2 years ago, I was there with Congressman Dix, I was there with Senator Cantwell, and there's a very clear understanding from the Colvilles that those fish would be passed through with a non-targeted category. I want to just look at summer Chinook in light of the Lower Columbia River Fisheries Reform. 2012, I chaired for the commission on behalf of the Fish Committee that process. In our joint talks with the Oregon Commission, the conclusion of that year for summer Chinook, we had agreed to the language that said no targeted fishery. That allowed for incidental take in either commercial or other recreational fisheries, but the signal to staff for any harvest guideline was no targeted fisheries. So when the agreement was done, it went to the Oregon Commission for final action. They unilaterally changed the agreement to allow a harvest guideline, a 60-40 recreational commercial allocation ratio for the first 2 years, then a 70-30 for the next 2 years, and then that point, which we're in now, an 80-40 for the long term. In addition, it was not very comforting this year to look back over the data from Bonneville down on the recreational fishery. It exceeded its summer Chinook allocation by 119%. The zone between Bonneville up to Priest was at 63%. The overall combination of the two was an overage of 108%. Now, the commercial harvest this summer Chinook fell far short of their allocation, and that's on the account of the inability to basically fish on the main stem river. Last year's recreational summer Chinook harvest in the lower Columbia River was the fourth highest since 2002. Chair, I have three recommendations, if I can go through them quickly. And this is one to all of you. When examining the Lower Columbia River Agreement, I'd suggest use a committee as a whole. We made a mistake, and we did this, to represent Washington. The issues are simply too complex for all commissioners that can attend to not attend. This is a very difficult fishery, and I've been on the Pacific Council, North Pacific Council, U.S. Canada. This matches any of them, maybe exceeds any of them for complexity. It's impossible for you to play catch-up and make an intelligent decision if you don't participate. Number two, when dealing specifically with summer Chinook, there's two important numbers. The first is the harvest guideline, if that's set. The second is the ratio. Don't get hung up with a ratio. The commercial fishery has a very hard time, since they're not fishing on main stem, really affecting that. Their catch is 200 or 300 fish. So if you see a 80-20, 70-30, even a 90-10, don't get hung up with that number. Get hung up with a harvest guideline if one's submitted. I encourage you to do what we did in 2012 and simply give guidance of no targeted fishery. If you lose on that, the only thing I can think of to come back to Oregon with would be some sort of a percentage or a cap. Staff do not like a quota or a cap. It's difficult to work by, but something like a 5% would achieve exactly what you're doing today. Keep in mind, if we trigger the ESA on summer Chinook, all our Chinook species are now listed. Our sockeye, our steelhead are listed. It really complicates your life and your decision making. Finally, just prior to, once you've reached on a final decision, you know, go back through the chain. Go to the Upper Columbia River for a quick meeting, the Mid Columbia and the Lower Columbia, to have input before you meet with Oregon. And Chair, I really appreciate seeing the Commission looking this far out. We didn't do that. And I think some of the mistakes you're seeing is mistakes that we were so rushed. Thank you very much for your courtesy.
Thank you, Raleigh. I know I speak for all of us. It's great to see you. And it's kind of strange to see you on that side rather than this side, though. But,
kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Bryce Devine, please, and Nello.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Smith, excuse me, and Commissioners and Acting Director Storr. Thanks for the opportunity to speak again on this important topic. I do realize here, after seeing the presentation and hearing the comments back already, that there's going to be a lot more bites to this apple, and I think that that's prudent and a well-thought-out plan here as we move forward. I see a few faces in the room of people that have been in this process since it was initiated a number of years ago. And just a reminder, I mean, there's tens of thousands of hours that have been put into this policy when it was first drafted. And since that time, not only with commissioners in both states, staff in both states, but also members of the public as well, showing up at commission meetings and so forth. About a year ago, we got 54 legislators sending a letter to the commission. I can send that around again if there are some folks here that weren't on the commission then. But 54 legislators in Washington at this time, a little more than a year ago, asking the commission to stand firm on this policy. This has been a topic for a long time. You will hear, I think, that it's a user group issue or an allocation issue. Just to take you back, the proposed recovery plan for the Snake River salmon 23 years ago in here, their objective was to get non-tribal gillnets off the main stem Columbia River. So this is a conservation issue. This is for our salmon, for our future generations to do this. I think we saw that, generally speaking, the plan is working very well in the spring and the summertime with the off-channel areas. There may be an argument to be made that it's not working great for the recreational community, but I think for the gillnet community is working wonderfully. If you weren't in the commission meetings before, you heard time and time and time again testimony saying that off-channel areas will not work. They're too crowded, so forth and so on. But we see here that they're working. Alternative gears, we heard time and time again that they will not work, unfortunately. Up to this point, for a number of different reasons, they haven't worked. That's unfortunate. I think at some point, necessity is the mother of all invention. But I want to bring up one other issue, too, when we're talking about the fall. That is going to be tricky managing this year. Last year, we all know that steelhead were the limiting factor and that gillnet fishery had to be shut down early, thankfully, because of too many interceptions of the B-run steelhead. This year, I think it will be a different story anyways if forecasts are accurate. The upriver bright forecast is way down. Actually, good news, it looks like the steelhead forecast is up a little bit, at least on the B runs that I was seeing. But we've got word that staff is, and I'm going to leave you with this one thought. We got word that staff is in Washington with a policy that's supposed to end in this year, supposed to be the last year. We got word that staff is trying to lower gillnet mortalities on steelhead. And my question for you is, if there's only 1 year left and this may not even go through in time, what message is that sending to the recreational community? So I'll just end with, I hope you all take leadership on this and stand firm on this policy. Thank you.
Thanks, Nello. Greg Johnson, please, and Bryce.
Thank you, Chairman Smith, and good morning, Commissioners. My name is Bryce Devine. I'm a commercial advisor from Longview, Washington, and I made the long drive over here, and I was quite impressed that these fish actually swim this far. Anyway, we received the document in question, the summary sheet, on Wednesday, and I think it's a very good document. It's a good start to a comprehensive analysis of how this policy is working. And there was a couple of items I wanted to bring up that I think that you need to really be aware of, and when you evaluate this policy, there's a tendency to look at the ex vessel value and put a lot of weight on that. But the ex vessel value, it exists of two things. It's poundage by price, and the price is completely outside the control of the policy or me, you, anybody. And a really good example of that would be, as we received this at our advisor meeting on Wednesday, Tucker Jones of Oregon said that 2017 was the best year for spring Chinook in the select areas that we'd had so far, and it actually, that's not true. The best year we had was 2010, and in 2010 we had like 25,000 fish catch, and last year was about 17,000. So if you took the 25,000, or it took the 17,000 of last year at 2010 prices, would have been a considerably less amount. So if I think that we really need to have an accounting or a graph of prices and compare that, because prices are so volatile. It's really hard to evaluate this fishery without considering price. And also another item, the PHAS has improved quite a bit over this time, but what is the mechanism for that improvement? It's certainly not from a commercial selective harvest. It's you're leaning heavily on hatchery production cuts, and I don't see that there's a path to improve on that without getting some more harvest, unless you want to decrease your hatchery production even more. As far as the selective gear, I think the perception in the fleet is that this is built on that this policy has a strong element of populism in it, and anything that we do to substantially reduce hatchery escapement is going to have an effect on a sport fishery and bring a reaction from them that's negative. And so it's really hard to justify an investment in some of these more expensive alternatives, given the fact that we could be closed by protests from the sports sector. So as I can see, I could throw in a few ands and keep going, but since I'm out of time, I think I'll save your time and take my seat. Thank you.
Thanks, Bryce. Dennis Ashmore, please, and Greg.
Good morning. My name is Greg Johnson. I'm a commercial advisor. This past Wednesday, we got to review this document, and I would suggest it's a good place to begin. And as it grows and contracts with information, and it gets you selected smaller or larger, I think it'll serve you people well. And in that light, I would like to, I guess, jump on Mr. Schmitten's bandwagon when he suggested that a committee of the whole commission participating in the big review is an important thing. I sat on the Kitzhopper process as a stakeholder, and when we went to talk to commissioners, some of the commissioners on the commission post meeting, they were just at a significant disadvantage, and it was really difficult for them to catch up and understand the volume of information displayed. So if that's possible, I think that would be functional. I just got back from PFMC, and this is a big theme down there amongst the salmon people. And if we're going to continue to be salmon people, we need salmon. And this has been bounced around quite a bit recently, but the state of Washington since 1992 has reduced production by 190 million smolt. And that breaks down into, there's about 62% of 1992 Chinook levels are current, and 30% of coho. So, under that trajectory, you can write as many policies as you want. It's a failing thing, and it's going to get worse. And the worst thing for me, from my perspective, is you're going to lose advocacy. As interest wanes and declines, and then we're just in a perpetual worse place, especially when it comes to wild fish. So, moving on, conflict in the policy and amongst user groups was a big theme early on. And I would just say, we're in that position again in this season-setting process. I'm not pointing a finger anywhere. I'm just saying we've got two different numbers for the fall, and it's going to be, as a person who participates heavily in it, it's just going to be until a decision is made and rendered on where we'll land on this sharing. That's just another piece of conflict moving on. Also, within our industry, we find it very, I'd say, punitive relative to the spring Chinook. Not that the share isn't bigger, not that we don't have a placeholder in every year, but we have, for example, it mixes in with this alt gear idea. I've got two tooth nets for coho fishing. I've got two tooth nets for spring Chinook fishing. I've got a beach seine, none of which I believe I've used in the last 2 years. The whole point is that we don't seek to fish every year as the plan exists, but when surpluses exist that even after being passed from the lower river to the upriver, that those fish should be made available under that circumstance only, once they're completely utilized within the recreational fishery. If there's a surplus, utilize it. We have the gear. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Mike Craig, please, and Dennis.
Good morning. My name's Dennis Ashmore. I live in Chelan. Beautiful Lake Chelan, as I refer to it. A lot of people were fishing there this morning. I came down to express my interest in lack of steelhead in the Upper Columbia. I am not a longtime steelhead fisherman. I've only fished for steelhead for 6 years, but I'm hooked on them. So bad that I come down here to ask you folks to give strong consideration to the fact that there is not equity between the Upper Columbia and the Lower Columbia fisheries. There is not. When I look at the rules, I read that they're allowed two steelhead in the Lower Columbia. When I read the rules, I don't get to fish in the Upper Columbia for steelhead. Why is that? Why can't we have an equity here that says in the Lower Columbia, the fishermen are only allowed one steelhead per day, no night fishing, to allow more fish to come up to the Upper Columbia for fishing? I have gentlemen that I fish with that are 87 years of age. They can't wade the rivers, but they can stand on the banks of the Columbia at Wells Dam and fish with me and enjoy steelhead fishery. That to me is enough to make me want to come down and ask you to please consider lowering the limit for the lower Columbia so that we can have our fishery back in the upper Columbia. To go along with that, the sockeye fishery, last year they closed it on us, but by gummy, they were still fishing the lower Columbia for sockeyes. What happened there, folks? There's 500,000 sockeye that come down the Okanagan River into the Columbia from Canada. Did they get what they needed last year? We don't know. We really don't know. But we're looking for answers, and one of my solutions is to limit what happens on the lower Columbia so the folks on the upper Columbia can have their fair share of the fishery as well. Again, I thank you, and I appreciate your time and effort for being here. Don't forget to get outside and enjoy some of our beautiful sunshine. Thank you, folks.
Thanks, Dennis. Yeah, after 12 hours yesterday and today, we don't know what sunshine is anymore. So Mike Craig is not... Oh, he had to leave. Okay. So Aaron Weissmore and Kai Solander. Was that right? You're Aaron?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for allowing me to come up here. I am probably the youngest one in the room here, but I'm also someone who's been fishing for his whole life, grew up fishing on lakes and streams, and has more recently gotten into the salmon fishery in the Columbia, but has taken off rapidly. I fish anywhere from Kalama all the way up to Chief Joe. Actually turned down a spring Chinook trip today to come here and speak to you guys. On that note, though, something that has been reoccurring, so I know Raleigh brought it up, and I know Brant brought it up as well, is the lack of spring Chinook in our area. Last year, we were fortunate enough, I don't know if you call it fortunate, to be able to fish on the lower Columbia an extended season, but as bittersweet as that was, we lacked in a spring Chinook season up here on the Icicle, which was the first time in who knows how many years that wasn't opened. Something else I wanted to encourage you guys is to stand firm on the Columbia River policy. The off-channel fisheries are working. The policy towards Oregon, we need to stand our ground on that and be able to get the commercial gill nets off the river. Really want you guys to be able to stand your ground on that and work as a whole and as a unit versus individuals on that to be able to go up against Oregon on that. The policies on the lower river controlling the upper river, as the person before me said with the sockeye fishery, the lower river in years past, I know it is shifting a little bit now, the lower river controlled the whole river. And the gates at the bottom were controlled by the people of influence down there. And there were several times where things were closed up here, but those fish were being caught down at the lower river because that fishery was open. I am someone who will travel all the way down to the lower river just to be able to fish, but the Columbia is right here. Why aren't we able to fish it? Why do I have to travel down the same river to fish for the fish that come up here just because it's open in the lower river, but it's closed up here? Something that if you live in the lower river, you don't quite experience because it's frankly almost always open. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Well said. Kai is on. Stan Brogan and Brad Schilport. Perot. Sorry. Who? Yeah. Well, if you were a Smith, I'd get it, I tell you.
Chairman Smith, Commissioners, Acting Director Storr, my name is Stan Brogdon. I'm here to testify today on behalf of CCA Washington, myself, and my children. First, I want to thank you guys for holding the meeting in Wenatchee and allowing time for us to testify on this topic. It's kind of hard for some of us to get to Olympia where the meetings normally are, so this is very much appreciated. I'm going to keep my head down and read fast, otherwise there's no way I'm getting through this. Let me start by saying this. While the Columbia River Basin Management Policy approved in 2013 is not perfect, the policy is not the problem. How it has, and more importantly, has not been implemented is the problem. And quite frankly, it's the same problem that's existed for as long as I've been paying attention to issues in Northwest fisheries. Protect all listed species through development of alternative harvest methods. Protect all listed species through reduction of harvest capacity. establish sufficient safe areas to move gillnet harvest off the main stem. These all sound like statements straight out of the management policy, right? They came out of documents like the one Nello showed you earlier from NIMPS in 1995. A conservation document. 23 years ago, we were talking about developing alternative harvest methods, reducing the size of the commercial fleet, and getting gillnets off the river. All good ideas, fairly straightforward ideas. All of them are still not done today. This has never been about us against commercial fishing. It's a gear issue. Gillnets are not the equipment to use on listed stocks. At some point, we have to look in the mirror and truly ask ourselves why that is. Why is it still in the river? I've briefly gone through the review staff's put together, and I don't have time to touch on all the issues at all, so I'm going to skip ahead over some of the stuff I did write last night so I can try and get done. Staff's going to try and convince you later this year or early next year that you need to reopen this policy so they can make adjustments to it. I guarantee you the policy is not the problem here. Implementation is the problem. To reopen the policy is simply letting staff off the hook, and that's not an acceptable outcome at this point. I am saddened, actually I'm kind of angered, that with all the issues these fish face, all the history we can't undo, all the things society as a whole is unwilling to address because of the cost, that we're still coming here to these meetings again and again to ask you guys to do the right thing. It's the right thing for conservation. It's the right thing economically. And it's the right thing to do for all the people sitting in this room that we keep asking to pay more money to enjoy the privilege to spend time going after less fish. But we're still here. Commissioners, if I could just go for a couple sentences. I'm going to ask a favor of every one of you. Okay. I know none of us have really had a chance to truly dive into that document yet, so I'm going to ask that you just do one thing as you're going through it. When you read the responses to the 40 questions that were posed by you to staff that they sort of based the review on, in the back of your head, I want you to ask yourself whether the answer sounds like it was prepared by people who are truly trying to get gillnets off the river, or if it was written by people who are trying to keep them on. The answer will be crystal clear very quickly.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you for your time.
And Doug Baldwin, please. And Brad, I got that one right.
Thank you, Chairman. let's just stick to a first name basis here.
how is your last name said?
Skilperart.
Okay.
Sounds like school report. Thank you for the opportunity to allow me to come here and speak to you guys and kind of let you know how I feel about things. I'm a CCA member, proud of it, but I'm here to kind of represent myself and my family, my grandchildren, and their children. I'll start off with encouraging you guys to stick with the policy as written. Don't deviate from it. Stick to it as written. It's a good policy, and we'd like to see it implemented fully. And let's just go from there with that. It's really important, I believe, and it's important to save as many of these fish as we can. The second thing I'd like to remind you all of is that the fish don't stop at Bonneville Dam. They do migrate up here, and the allocations that we've been getting to be able to fish, as long as I can remember, it certainly doesn't seem fair to us Eastsiders, as I'll call us. So, you know, when you're thinking about the allocation of spring Chinook salmon and the timing of the spring Chinook salmon, I'm not so much concerned really about the allocation for summer fish or fall fish, because we all get our shot at those. But the spring Chinook salmon, first of all, we don't hardly get a week's worth of fishing in before the allocation is met, and second of all, the seasons and the openers and the closers for those seasons, a lot of times the fish aren't even there yet, and so for a lot of folks, they don't even get a shot to go fish for them. now that I'm retired, I can, you know, I have six Saturdays and a Sunday to go get them. But the poor people that have to work, they don't even get a chance to go wet a line a lot of chances before those fish are caught. We only have 900 fish to catch this year above Bonneville, so that's not very many fish. Do the best you can as a commission. You know, I ask you, Jay, Dave, Kim, Brad, Larry, Don, Robert, Barbara, Amy, and Joe, what's your legacy going to be as a commission? Think about that. Think about what your legacy is going to be left with here. I hope your legacy is that this is the best commission ever assembled in the history of the state of Washington. That's what I hope for you guys. And I think you can do it. And I don't think there's a better time in history than right now for you guys to pull together and do the right things for us, for the fishery. So consider that as you guys move forward. There's a lot of data to digest, a lot of stuff to go through, but just kind of remember what your legacy is going to be when you're done. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brad. And Steve Bush, please, and Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the board, and acting director. I'm Doug Baldwin, Pullman, Washington, conservation chair of Clearwater Flycasters. I'm vice president of Hills Canyon Chapter CCA, member of TU and FFI. I worked for Gilnetter in Vancouver, Washington, part-time as a high school student in 62 and as a college student up through 65. I did not like the method. I quit that fishery in August of 65. Pardon me. Picking a 35-pound steelhead out of a 13-inch mesh net. A large mesh net today is 9-inch. What does that tell you? You take the largest and the most prime out of every species, every run for 150 years, we're going to be down to minnows. We need to quit that. I love the plan that was established for 13 up through today, and I urge you to hold the line, particularly in August. Your large mesh nets go in. Thank you. That's when the B-run steelhead are running, Aurora Columbia. And they run same channels, they run in the same nets, and they do not survive. And there is no more endangered species upriver than the B-run right now, coming back to the Clearwater. So please, I urge you to hold the line. The upriver brights are totally a Washington origin. I know that was a big battle in 12 and 13 when this Kitzhaber plan was being implemented. It's Washington fish. Play hardball. Hold the line. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And Robert, sit down. And Steve.
Well, my name is Steve Bush, and I thank you for having this meeting here in Wenatchee. I live in Moscow, Idaho. I think I came to the wrong meeting. but I have lived along the Clearwater River for a long time, since the 80s, and used to fish a lot when I lived in Orofino. And I lived in Lewiston for a while. And the fishery in the Idaho Clearwater River is a lot smaller than it used to be, and so that's why I'm here today. I'm a member of CCA, I'm a member of Trout Unlimited, and I'm a member of Fly Fishing Federation, and I like to fish, and I'd like to be able to continue to fish and fish with my children. And so I'd just like you to keep the gillnets out of the river if you can, and try and allow the hatchery fish to get back to Orofino, as well as any wild fish that can make it up here as well. So I just want you to do the same thing, hold the line, and play hardball, and try and keep the keep the fish in the river if we can, to keep them up all the way up to the Clearwater River, because Idaho would like to see some as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And you didn't come to the wrong meeting. We're privileged to have a foreigner. Bob, you get the last word on this outfit.
Sudar, commercial advisor from Longview. I was also a member of the 2012 working group. And first, it's impossible for me to answer a lot of what I've heard today, though I would like to. It was a lower river policy. I've told you that many times. I understand that it had impacts on the upper river, but it was, you can talk to staff. It was a lower river policy. We had a recreational advisor from Walla Walla who did not attend the last meeting because he said that it was clear it was not going to have as big an impact on his part of the river as he thought it would be. So I want to make that clear right off the bat. The gillnet fisheries from 1965 and the 1980s or the 1990s bear no reflection on the gillnet fisheries we have now in the river. You can't look at those old fisheries and think that that's the way we fish now. And there's lots of examples of why that's true. Salmon are a food fish. They belong to the public. 97% of the public does not fish for salmon. And they all pay for it through hatchery production, either through Mitchell Act money or mitigation money. We've heard that many times. It's a public resource, and they have access to the commercial fishery. If you look at the document, we got it Wednesday as we entered the room for our meeting. We only got through question number one, basically. And in that one, it clearly points out that conservation is not a factor in spring and summer management through the policy. So when we talk about this being a conservation plan, we totally lost our spring and summer fisheries, and they have nothing to, they aren't even a conservation item in how the policy was crafted. Another one I want you to look at is number 11, which is their definition of non-selective. It's an absolutely, I like their document, but that is an absolutely ridiculous definition. It says that because we make nets that target the Chinook we're trying to catch, that we're non-selective. It, at the same time that it says that by using big gear, we don't handle steelhead and sockeye. And that's, I mean, selectivity, the main way to do it is through avoidance. You don't go to the grocery store and throw all the tomatoes in your basket and then sort out the ones you want. You have some way to filter that and pick out just the ones that you might want to buy. And that's what our nets are doing. We're building gill nets that tackle, that target Chinook salmon, and the observations last year showed how effective we were. We did get shut down when we got to 6 of our 7 B steelhead, but that's a pretty darn selective fishery considering we caught 20,000 Chinook. I mean, that it's so frustrating to hear these kinds of comments. In the summer season, in the last few years, the wild component has been as big or bigger than the hatchery component. Our 900 fish would have created 25,000 meals last year if we'd been allowed to catch them. That's a lot of people that could have benefited from a couple days of our harvest, and we would like to have access to that. The ocean killed more. The recreational fishery killed more through their catch and release. The tribal fishery killed more. It's unreasonable to hold us up as a non-selective fishery that's causing a problem when we have the smallest impact of anybody. And I'd like another, one more minute, since I'm the last guy. And it's a long way to come for 3 minutes. The summer Chinook that were caught in the select area last year were late spring and early fall fish. There is no select area summer release. If you also look at what was released in 2010 for our 2012 return to the select areas and compare that to what was released for last year's return, there were 15% more spring smolts, 50% fewer select area bright smolts, 11% more tule smolts, and 17% more coho smolts. So everything else was already part of our select area production. So I've been working on a response. You can look forward to receiving it in the next week or so.
Right.
But it is a lot to respond to.
Right, it is. Well, so, we appreciate that.
Thank
very much.
We got the report Wednesday too, so we feel your pain, but thank you, Robert.
Well, you know, as a user group that's being hammered by this, yeah. we need to have an opportunity to talk with you on an extended basis about this subject. It's we're the ones who are on the docket for losing everything, along with the markets we sell to, and this is a punitive policy, and that's what frustrates me the most, with no thanks. Science.
Thanks, Robert. And thank you all that did spend your Saturdays giving up fishing trips and driving long ways. This is beneficial to us, believe me when I say that. And I appreciate the decorum it was done. Sometimes in our meetings, it becomes a reality TV show that is not professional nor beneficial to us. But you guys all done yourselves proud and your testimony was all spot on. We heard it. The staff heard it. And we look forward, as Commissioner Carpenter said, that if you have comments, please provide us with them. This is a work in progress. And, again, thank you. So I hope some of you can go out still and fish today. Wish I could. Thank you. And with that, if there's some final thoughts on this, I'll entertain that. With the emphasis on the word final.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just say just a couple of words about the comprehensive evaluation and then make a recommendation to the commission that they might consider in terms of how to move forward on the process here. There is a strong need for a comprehensive evaluation. This policy has been in place since 2013, and there are several reasons why we ought to take a look at that. It's called for in the policy, for one thing. So if we have a policy that we're following, we ought to follow all of it, including that part. In preparing for this meeting, I drove for 6 hours and happened to listen to the commission meeting of January 2013 when this policy was adopted. And there's three folks at the front table who were there, and there's a gentleman in the back who was also at the front table then. The adaptive management section was talked about for much of the 3 hours by the commissioners. In fact, it was one of the most dominant things spoken of. And they referred to talking to the Attorney General folks, and all of it had to do with there are a lot of things in this policy that we're uncertain about. And for that reason, we need to evaluate and adapt as we move through this. So there was a strong recognition that what we were trying here, we're not sure about all aspects of it, but let's have a go at it. I think that there's a need to properly consider changes. Yes, maybe some, maybe not. How do you know? You need a thorough, comprehensive evaluation before you can even decide that. We're going to be talking with Oregon about some concurrent regulation problems. And Mr. Twight talked about the possibility of that occurring. It looks like November 1st might be a time to do that. It's not confirmed yet. But in order to have a strong position going into those discussions on concurrency, we need to have a comprehensive evaluation of how things have gone. We've already heard some public testimony about what we might want to bring into that meeting, but we need to have our facts straight and our analysis straight. At first blush, and we heard a little bit of this in the staff presentation, it appears like some important expectations of the policy are not occurring. And if that's true, we need to know that, and it's very important to know that. We want good policies to work as expected. We want to achieve stated goals, and we want to accomplish the stated provisions. And so I can't stress enough that before we start talking about what to do down the road, I think we need to have a very thorough, comprehensive evaluation of the policy, just like those folks expected us to do when they adopted it. So with regard to next steps, we heard a little bit about the difficulties of getting this big report and not having a chance to look at it. And the report noted there are other things that were incomplete. So let me outline a couple of steps as we move forward to the month of September. And we have a commission meeting in September that would be the one that's before we sit down with Oregon for a concurrent meeting. So in September, if we want to target that this analysis be complete, that this analysis be done in time for the commissioners to be able to read it in advance, for this to be done so that our advisors and the public can have a chance to read it and come and testify. And if we're still on 3 minutes, I know that's very, very difficult, they have a chance to write a letter and that we do read the letters. So I would like to provide a target for staff of September 1st as having this document completely done and out for distribution so that the advisory bodies, the public, and those of us at the front table have a chance to digest it. I think that it would be good if the staff went ahead and took a look at the existing document and went through what I'm going to call clerical errors of pagination and things like that, and get a revised document out next week that might be a little bit more readable and displace the current document that's posted on the website and have one that's at the highest level of professional attractivity. I would suggest that if commissioners have any comments that they provide those to the staff by the end of March. The kind of questions on clarification that we aren't talking about now, if there was an answer that we didn't understand, say something like that. If there's an answer that we'd like more analysis on for the next step, to give that to the staff by the end of March. And then that the commission take a look at continuous reviews of this draft as we move towards September. At the April commission meeting, at the June commission meeting, and at the August commission meeting, that we get a continuous status report from the staff as this document evolves toward completeness. This could be done at Fish Committee meetings. We weren't successful doing that. We heard testimony about having the full commission think about all this. I'm not sure if it should be on the Fish and Wildlife Commission agenda, but now that we have open meetings, other commissioners besides the Fish Committee can be in attendance, and the public can attend as well. And so I'm suggesting and recommending then that if the staff comes forward in April with the next version of their document, maybe they might still have a few answers that aren't complete, but they'll have more. And then at the June Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting, having the staff come forward again at a Fish Committee setting at an informal time where dialogue can occur and commissioners can delve into it, talk about it again, and then again in August. At that September meeting, then, would be the time for the commissioners to judge whether or not the comprehensive evaluation is done. And if it is, to have some initial considerations on whether or not there ought to be some change, and what should the Washington Commission's position be as we move toward the November meeting. Maybe we would like some more staff analysis on changes or analysis on concurrency so that we go into that meeting with Oregon as prepared as we possibly can. After the November meeting, maybe that's the time for serious considerations of whether or not policy 3620 ought to be adjusted, and if so, why. The staff recommended looking at alternatives. Public testimony recommended going up and down the river and hearing from the public. At some point before the end of 2018 or early 2019, it'd be good to address the staff's concern about the dilemma that they brought forward in their PowerPoint. But at any rate, there's time after November to do those kinds of things. So, Mr. Chairman, I've been thinking about this a lot. I'll probably think about it again in the 5 to 6 hours drive home. Those are my thoughts on how we can get to this point of knowing whether or not this document that we've had for so long has some spots in there that aren't working, and if so, why.
Thanks, Commissioner McIsaac. It seems like you outlined a good operational game plan for us to move forward with. Yes. Commissioner Keeney.
Yeah, I'd like to agree 100% with what Commissioner McIsaac has laid out, and maybe add some thoughts of my own in detail to that. there was many people that spoke in the audience of stick to the plan, stick to the plan, stick to the plan, hold the line. And I just want to say that, because I was one of the commissioners, the three or four of us that were around in 2013, the plan included adaptive management, just as Commissioner McIsaac has said. So sticking to the plan isn't locking it in place. Sticking to the plan is looking to see what's working and what's not. That's really important to this process. And I think in my review of this material that was presented to us on, I just got it today because I wasn't home Wednesday, I'm seeing that there's some things that we thought were going to work or happen, haven't happened. And that particularly is a focus on the commercial fishing industry. As I look at it, I see very little suitable alternative gear that has come forward. I see the off-channel production in Washington, anyway, not happening. I see the economic well-being of the commercial fleet. It's tenuous, I think, and this plan was never built to do away with commercial fishing. It was built to preserve the fish and the resources and eliminate take that was not intended. And I think we still have a ways to go to figure that out. I think when we allowed the upriver bright fall fishery, we said, let's have observers on those boats. And Mr. Sridhar talked about that a little. But I have not really heard a final report from our staff as to how that went and what's the meaning of that. Is what the commercial fisher folks saying reasonable? Is it not? Is six fish out of 20,000 reasonable? Or is it not? You know, I think we need more information on that, and I think staff could begin working on that right now. I don't think a buyback of gillnet licenses is happening, and there's just some of the fisheries that have never materialized. That is part of staying the course on this plan, is to realize those things have happened. Good or bad, some of those have happened. So we have to relook at that and think about how that affects the overall plan. I think that the concept, and I think I brought it up a couple of meetings ago, of allowing some input on a larger scale than 3-minute testimony is definitely needed. It's about the time that any one of you that gives a testimony, I want to hear more, and there's really no venue for that here. Maybe a suggestion would be to invite particular people from each side of this issue to some of the Fish Committee meetings and have them, you know, have an opportunity to spend 20 minutes each talking about a particular aspect of this subject. What's that? I know. We only know this guy by his first name.
True report. See, I got it now.
And that would take some discussion amongst you all out there to say, who do we want to send in to give the best factual information from our perspective? I think off of that note, I also heard a very strong contingent in this room today of, you know, let's look at this lower versus upper, especially spring Chinook seasons limits. And then living up here, I live on the Okanagan River, and I've got to fish that, I think, once for steelhead. And, you know, I hear that loud and clear. And I think even though the policy might have been directed solely at lower Columbia, it affects people in this neck of the woods, so I support that. But, you know, in summary, I just support everything Commissioner McIsaac said, and maybe to leave, my thought is that if people could realize this plan was never intended to be locked in 100%, adaptive management, as he said and listened to in the last 3 hours of that meeting, was a huge part of how this has to move forward. And it's no different in salmon recovery versus wolf recovery. What you know and what goes into a plan on any given moment, you don't have 100% accuracy. You don't have a crystal ball. And so you've got to adapt a little bit down the road. And hopefully you're adapting based on new information, new science, new facts, and the people that are out there living this, whether it's recreational fishermen or commercial fishermen. So.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Keeney. And I, as another one that was there when this was done with Commissioner Keeney, I strongly endorse you took the wind out of my sail in terms of what I was going to say about adaptive management and all that. So I'm not going to take any more time except that I endorse what was just said.
And as I mentioned earlier, too, we just started on this. It's really important, as Commissioner Keeney, mentioned, that we hear from the public. We need to hear from both sides of the issue, but I strongly urge you to communicate with the commission. You know, look what some of these groups were able to accomplish, some of the advocacy groups, as we approached the time of adoption of the policy. There was a great coalescence, and there was a pretty clear message to this commission and Oregon Commission about where the recreational community stood on this. And it's important, as you can see right now, we're starting the process, and I encourage you to communicate with the commission, all of us, as best you can as we move forward. It's going to be very, very important.
Commissioner Carpenter, and we'll go down and then
thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back in time, but I want to be brief about it. Back when this started, we in Washington were handed an assignment that was created and handed us by Governor Kitzhaber. And we had to engage. We had to get up to speed. I don't think I ever in my career spent more hours in meetings during this Columbia River process. It was amazing, and I was blessed to serve on the work group with two folks. Raleigh Smitten was one of them. He was our lead with a stellar career in natural resource management in the state and back in D.C. And Conrad Mencken, Ph.D., retired from NOAA, brilliant man. And the alternative work group member was Gary Duvier from over in the Spokane area. So these guys have been in this arena in their career for decades. And having said that, no one handed us a template and said, here's the template on how to fix this. We had to ad-lib it, work through it, meet with Oregon, have stakeholders around the table. And I can go back and say, I can pass a red face test and say, we did the best we could do. And we knew it wasn't going to be perfect. I don't think you can find perfect in a natural resources environment in any way, shape, or form. It didn't turn out perfect, but I think it worked better than some people thought. We need to go back now with stakeholder involvement and see where the screws need to be turned and what can be done. So I'm on board with what McIsaac, Keeney, David, Graybill, and Brad have said. That's the way we're going to go.
Moving on down,
Barbara.
Then Joe, you will have the last word on this.
My last word is I reserve my time for future meetings on this topic.
He's got a mic.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that we deliver what you need, right. And so I'd like to just run through what I've heard. Take 2 minutes here, mm-hmm. Recognizing that this discussion, this process is going to take place during the time that we finalize North of Falcon, finalize Pacific Salmon Treaty, you know, which is going to have some potential policy and or workload issues associated with it. But just saying that up front, what I've heard you ask us to do is to get a revised version of the document we have now that's more readable without typos out next week, to look at then the commissioners, you all would give us your questions, your scope suggestions by the end of March. That would include potentially the consideration of additional northern fisheries. So by the end of March, two weeks. In April, then, what I would propose is that we would come back to you with a recommended process that would include those decision points that we see having to occur during the process. We would utilize primarily the committee meetings. We have a monthly commission meeting monthly commission meeting every month except May. We, in that process, at our proposal, we would identify public processes and meetings, potential meetings with Oregon that would occur. We would aim to have our staff work complete by September 1st, which would allow time then for the commission to discuss the adequacy, and we would be able to identify issues of concurrency or non-concurrency with Oregon. And then finally, by November 1st, we would have hopefully worked out many of those concurrency issues and get the two commissions together in Vancouver and have a final, hopefully, joint process forward or policy. So that's what I heard you say, and that's you know that's what I'll start off assuming, looking for your feedback and input by the end of March.
Just a bit of adaptive management in practice, knowing that North of Falcon is ending in April 12th or so. I would put forward suggestion that what Commissioner McIsaac said about end of March, to allow a couple weeks flexibility in that, given the timeline.
Chairman, a couple of comments. I heard you mention something about northern fisheries, and the intent there was that the commissioners would get their questions of clarification, that if we had read this document for a week before we came here today, would have been the kind of questions of clarification that we would have posed here. Those were the kind of questions we would try to get to the staff by the end of the month so that they could then start reacting to that. You mentioned something about public meetings with Oregon over the summer, and I didn't mean to mention that. My thought there was that at our scheduled April, June, and August Fish and Wildlife Commission meetings, that we have a fish committee that deals with this topic at each one of those meetings. Maybe not at the front, not an agenda item. We set those independently, but that it be a topic for a progress report update, and that this document uses those as checkpoints to make sure that by September 1 that it is done. I did not mean to imply having public meetings with Oregon. And then lastly, something about working out the concurrent situation leading up to November 1st. I did not recommend that. My thought was that we have a completed evaluation that is our view of this. The staff works with Oregon, obviously, so that there's not technical arguments about it, but that we were not delegating to the staff to go work out concurrency details with Oregon and bring back a solution in November, that policy choice was to be made at this table, and that would be the topic of discussion in November. And, of course, we'd look at everything there, but it was not an assignment to staff to go try to work that out in advance. That first discussion with Oregon on concurrency may or may not end up with a complete resolution, but at least the intent there was we would have finished our complete evaluation. We'd know and feel confident about what has happened, and we'd be prepared for that concurrency discussion.
Yeah. Thanks, Commissioner McIsaac. This is why I wanted to lay this out here.
Right.
I didn't mean to say, if I did, that we would have public meetings with Oregon. What I was trying to propose is, in our April proposal to you, we would think about what sorts of within Washington public process we might want to have to gather input
later.
Okay. for the Washington position. I heard that from several members of the public. As well as what we might need to, at a staff level, talk to Oregon about, not assuming any delegation, not assuming any responsibilities. But we did commit to get back to Oregon in terms of planning for the November 1st meeting. So it'd be that logistical planning kind of discussion is what I was referring to. And again, in terms of once we bring the September package to the commission, if there was a need that you identify to go work something out with Oregon at a staff level, you know, we would take that on, but it would only be as you know, directed by the commission. Anyway, the bottom line is, well, I'll write something up for you, work with staff,
and then we can tweak
you
it
can
if needed.
Yeah, do with it as you will.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, and I think that'll bring to a closure this. And again, thank you all for spending your time with us. It was our pleasure and our learning opportunity.